Welcome to episode 14 of the Hunting Party Podcast. I'm Euripides from FTPS.com.
I'm Dark Brew from TheBrewHall.com.
And I'm Frostheim from WarcraftHuntersUnion.com.
We have an excellent show lined up for you today, as always. We're going to start off with the news.
And then we have an interview with Kriparian, the only hunter who has actually beaten the World of Warcraft.
And we'll also be reading some reader emails as well.
So first up, the news this week. So the only hunter-relevant news this weekend is instance difficulty. MMO Champion released a blue post that they had found about this. Basically, the way it's going to work is that when you're starting to do a fight in Ice Crown, you have to choose whether it's going to be regular or hard mode, and you don't have two lockouts. You can't have a group that does the regular every week and then tries to get as far as they can in the hard mode the way that we currently do. So that's the main... What do you guys think about that?
I think it's kind of a mixed bag. There's upsides and downsides. I mean, it's a little unfortunate that you don't have the ability to burn through the normal mode to collect your emblems or to gear up new people or something. But on the other hand, I'm like imagining if Trials of the Crusader was that way, you know, and you're going through the hard modes and you can be like, okay, we're going to hard mode Beast, we're going to hard mode Draxxus. Hey, it's Faction Champions, we're doing that on normal. And now we still have the opportunity to do hard mode on later ones, rather than having these gating bosses that make you unable to do stuff later on.
Yeah, that makes a bit of sense.
It makes sense. I don't know. I don't think I'm... Here's what I don't like about it. And it seems right now that there's a fairly big gulf between the normal difficulties of these dungeons and the hard mode difficulties of these dungeons. And right now, one of the things we talked about doing on our particular realm, Euripides and I, was putting together, say, a TOGC... a cross-guild group to run 10-man in the hard mode. So under the new system, we would not be able to do something like that. And looking at the 25-man normal mode, there might come a point where, you know, this is it until Cataclysm, I presume. So eventually you're going to get to a point where your guilds have this on farm status. You're going to try and do the hard mode, but you might not be able to do it. But you might have some members of your guild who are perfectly capable of doing this hard mode content. And they may decide, you know, this is what they need to do. And in order for them to do it, they might have to leave your guild or form a new guild or form a high-end raiding group to go ahead and do the hard mode content. And under the new system in Ice Crown, you know, you won't be able to have both. You can't do your normal with your regular group and then find your own hard mode difficulty group. So I don't know if it'll be a potential guild killer, but it is something that, you know, I have to keep your eye on and see how that works out.
Yeah, I don't think that that's going to have a huge, huge effect, because the reality is most people who are pugging, they're not pugging hard modes, they're pugging normal modes. And guilds who are capable of doing normal are off. They're always knocking on the door for hard modes, you know, it's just a matter of whether they... I guess, yeah, getting saved to hard mode every week, no matter what, would preclude, unless you have an alt or something, it would preclude you from being able to do this outside of your guild, but I'm not sure how many people are actually in that situation.
I do think it has potential problems for guilds, you know, guilds that are constantly, you know, adding new people and cycling their memberships. It does become an issue for gearing people up. You know, so now your option is going to be like you're doing Ice Crown. You're like, oh, hey, well, we're trying to progress as much as we can. We're doing this on hard mode. We got this new person we need to gear up. Well, now we have to go all the way back to TOTC to gear them.
Yeah.
You no longer have that normal mode to get people like really good gear really easily.
Well, that's something that we'll have to keep an eye on, and we'll of course keep you guys in the loop. But now we're going to hop over to the interview right after this.
All right, and I'm actually going to step out and do a little bit of theory crafting. Discovered some anomalies in some of the Kriparian data, so I'm going to see what I can figure out with that.
This is Kirino from the Lumpers of Northrend blog.
This is Azriu from the arcanary.wordpress.com.
This is Alarian from the Rarcast Show.
This is Seth
and Sarah
from 1-cup.com.
And I'm giving my voice
to Azeroth United's
first annual
Hearts,
Hands, and Voice
for Child's Play Charity.
For Child's Play Charity.
You can give your heart
and
voice
and support Child's Play
by visiting AzerothUnited.com.
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 Okay, Today we welcome Criparian, a hunter from Exodus, a competitive raiding guild with many world firsts under their belt. Criparian is known for two things, his DPS benchmarks and his YouTube channel. He has more highest DPS benchmark fights than any other hunter in the world. He is a three-time Arena Gladiator. He has completed 965 of the game's 986 achievements, including Insane for the Membrane, which I believe took him about a week. And he has also earned approximately 1.2 million gold since October of 2008. In short, he has officially won WoW. Criparian, welcome to the hunting party.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Wow. Wow. That's all I got to say. When I read that the first time, I just like, you know, I'm like, there is somebody who has actually beat this game. I didn't think it was possible.
Yep.
Welcome to the show. If anybody's interested in seeing this YouTube channel that we were talking about, he has posted a lot of really interesting videos on YouTube that go over a lot of how he does what he does, and it's well worth a look. So we'll be including that in the show notes. But if you want to be able to find it without having to go and look through your iPod, just go and search for Criparian on Google, and it'll be the first result that comes up.
Yeah, and I would recommend people go take a look. I took a look at that earlier today, and some very nice stuff you've got there, Crip, for sure.
Thank you. I'm still working on it. I'm not really sure in which direction I'm heading, but I'm just trying to not have any bad videos. Like, they're not like all amazing, but as long as I don't have any bad videos, I figured end up pretty nicely.
Yeah. So far so good.
Yeah, we've been extreme. Everybody I've talked to who has seen those videos said to themselves, wow, I'm clearly doing it wrong, and I'm going to have to go watch the rest of them.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, speaking of the stuff that you're starting to put up there, you're basically known as a hunter with the highest recorded DPS. And like we said, we have watched your YouTube videos, and I wanted to get a little bit of a better idea of what you do that others might not. What kind of things do you do to get such high numbers?
Well, there's a lot of things. It's hard for me to, you know, go back and just know what I'm doing differently. But most of the questions that I get that I feel aren't the right ones, I get people asking me about, you know, what my rotation is. That's probably the overwhelming question in terms of popularity. And it really doesn't have anything to do with that. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. Like, when you're approaching a fight, it's not so much how you gem your gear or where you put like one or two talent points. If you do that differently, like, that's going to amount to a very small percent of a DPS increase. Most of what you're going to see is from how you do the boss fight. For instance, if there's, you know, let's say we're doing heroic beasts, when you got like all little snowballs out, pretty much every hunter, they're just going to attack either the snowball or Gormok in that case. They're just going to pump damage into one target. They're not really going to think about, you know, how I can best rotate Serpent Sting on the targets and how I can keep up piercing shots while I'm doing that, how I could sneak in multis. You know, they're not really theory crafting the boss. No one really is. They're all doing it instinctively, but they're not doing it consciously. You know, like, people just expect that if they do a boss fight enough that they're just going to become naturally better at it, which is the case, but they're not taking a very precise approach to it.
So they have a ceiling in terms of how far they can go with just knowing the rotation and sort of knowing the fight, then, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's pretty much what I'm saying. They're not really going into the specific fights. They're more focusing on their gear and their rotation, which is just more minimal. You should maximize it, but I mean, I don't even look into that too much. Like, I just look at spreadsheets for gear. Other people can do that enough. I don't need to do it any more than they do.
Hmm. So what would you say is the hardest part, technically, of what you do? Is it what you were talking about, knowing the fight so well that you can time your bleeds and you can time your serpent stings and stuff like that?
I don't know. The hardest part probably has to do with how to time your cooldowns, because you have to react with how your trinkets proc. So you want to stack cooldowns, you know, generally speaking, going back to basics here a little bit. If you have a trinket proc and you have a cooldown, you're going to want to overlap these, because they're going to give you, you know, they're going to multiply each other's benefit and give you greater DPS than if you would have used them individually. So
okay,
for you to time these properly, the first step that a lot of hunters have taken is they get like little cooldown bars, so they see, you know, looks like my, I don't know, greatness deck has gone off. You know, I'm going to pop rapid fire so I get the added benefit. But what they're really doing there is they're reacting to something that's happened, and they're losing the time from when they notice that it happened and they click the button. So those first like 3-4 seconds of the actual proc, they're not actually gaining the stacking benefit. And I think the hardest part really is on top of doing everything else in the fight that, you know, comes to greater priority, staying alive and, you know, using your abilities, is waiting for these procs. What I do is I track the internal cooldowns of these procs. So whenever a trinket procs, it can't proc for a certain amount of time, but when it can proc, it's usually going to within, you know, 1 or 2 seconds of it being able to do so. So
yeah,
it probably most challenging part is timing those perfectly, because it is more important than some people give credit for.
That's actually you say that these are the basics, but there are a surprising amount of hunters, and myself included, who just we look at the averages of the procs as the important thing, and we never even, you know, I haven't even tried to go ahead and keep tabs on my, I suppose whenever I see the little wings floating over my head, if I have a cooldown, I'll use it. But generally I try and keep all my cooldowns on cooldown. You know, and I do about as well as any other hunter does, except you. But you know, it's one of those things where a lot of hunters don't necessarily think, I mean, you know, actually this kind of leads into our next question. Like, if you were playing my character or any other hunter that wasn't your own, you know, how much of a difference would the ability to do what you just described add? I mean, like, is that the kind of thing that's, where are we talking like 5 or 10% here? Or are we talking more than that? Like, where, what is the potential benefit of somebody trying to become as good and set up the same way that you are?
Well, there's a lot of things that are involved, but I don't know. I might go a little bit on a side story here, but
Feel free.
Yeah, when season 5 was ending, it was the first like couple of months that I was with Exodus, and I wanted to play with some of my friends from, you know, the guild that that pretty much broken up. So I actually ended up making a second hunter. I made it so I, you know, just before the season ended, I wanted to get Gladiator, and I did Nax 25. I actually did it only one time, and I was there sporting like, you know, heroic blues and a Nessingwary 4000, I think it's called. It's just like, you know, garbage items. And it was in a pug, and I was beating like 3 other hunters, and they all had like full max gear, and they couldn't figure it out. And it was on trivial stuff. It was like on Patchwork and Grobulus, where you just stand there and do damage. So there's a pretty big difference, but it's hard to say which factor. You know,
I wish that I could write notes without making a lot of noise into my microphone. So I'm gonna have to go and listen to this again after. Okay, so you talked about cooldown timing. Is there anything else that you do that's different before we go on to the next question?
Well, I think I have an advantage with moving around over other hunters as well. It's a slight advantage, but you know, generally everything adds up. I pay particular attention to when my auto shot is about to go off. So when I have to move, I try to make it so I'm not losing any auto shots. And on top of that, I'm not using any damage globals. So like if I have to move, like, I don't know, like let's say 6-7 yards, I'm going to have my arcane shot up, and I'm probably going to have another shot to follow the arcane shot, or vice versa. So, you know, moving around, avoiding, you know, void zones, stuff like that. You're generally going to want to keep up in DPS, and that's something most hunters don't really pay attention to.
So in terms of your movement then, do you actually try and focus on how far in and how much movement you're actually doing? Because I know I've seen other hunters that'll just, you know, sometimes they'll run around, it looks like they've got a, you know, a chicken with their head cut off, and they're doing probably way too much movement. Is that something you work on in terms of limiting the amount of movement that you do in each of these encounters?
You don't necessarily want to limit it, but you want to know exactly which position you're going to head to when you need to head there, right? So, I mean, if it's a small movement, you're gonna have arcane shot up for that, and that's pretty much going to be all you need for like 3-4 yards. And anything more than that, you can use a disengage. And at the same time, doing that, you can cover a large distance and not lose any shots as well. It's really all about maximizing the amount of globals that you can get within a fight.
So what's one thing that most hunters could do then to get one step closer to doing as much DPS would do if you were in their shoes, do you think? What would be a good place for someone to start?
I really don't know. It's just a lot of little things that you pick up. If you have the mindset that, you know, you want to try to better yourself every time, you're going to want to evaluate what you did and think of a way to do it better. And, you know, next week you try to execute it. Eventually you're going to pick up on all these little small things that myself and a lot of other hunters are doing. But, you know, if you're just standing there trying to pay attention to your rotation, you know, you go, your explosive shot, and you count to four as you do the four steady shots, and then you do an explosive shot again, you're not really gonna do anything, right? I mean, you're gonna do the same every week.
So you're saying it's more the process of trying to get better over time that's the most important thing. It's no one, you wouldn't go out on a limb and say cooldown timing. You'd say the process.
Yeah, I'd say it's the learning process, because you're not gonna be able to pick up on everything that I'm saying and execute it the next week. It's gonna have to be a longer learning process, and the best way to handle that is to be self-motivated, I suppose, is kind of what I was talking about.
Okay. Sure. Well, speaking of those small things, you did mention using disengage in terms of, you know, adding to your movement. So what does someone need to do to sort of master it? You know, I know I've, you know, disengaged a few times and gone in different directions than I had expected or anticipated. So what would you recommend for working with that specific ability?
I think most of the mobility that I do is from PvP. Like in PvP, it's extremely important in what position you're in and how you can move to the next position that you want to be in. And, you know, if again, you're self-motivated to succeed in PvP, you're going to pick up these mobility skills that are going to give you a PvE advantage.
I've actually heard that quite a bit. But disengage is my own particular demon, because it seems that every single time I hit it, I never go the direction I think I will. Like if I'm mouse turning and my character hasn't caught up to the direction I'm going in, it doesn't feel like it always goes where I think. Maybe it's just because sometimes I do it when I'm stunned, but I mean, how do you deal with that? Do you just make sure that your character's pointing, you know, away from where you're trying to go before you actually hit it?
I don't know. I guess you need to practice a little bit with mouse control, but something that really helps that a lot of people don't know about, when you disengage, you want to jump in the direction that you want to disengage. And by doing that, you're going to understand the way you need to turn. Like if you're going to jump forward, you know that you're gonna have to turn 180 degrees mm-hmm. with a forward kind of anchor, right? If you jump sideways, you know where your anchor is every time. So the degree that you really move your mouse is pretty much the same if you follow that.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. That would probably help me quite a bit. And the other thing that would help with is if you're committed and you've jumped and you're in the air, you might as well take advantage of it. If you disengage from the top of your jump, you're going to get a few extra feet.
Yeah, that's right.
Huh. Okay. Well, next question I had for you, and this actually sort of ties into a few other things that we've been going over. Your UI, especially the one that you put on YouTube, it's when I say pretty standard, I mean, there's no one add-on that you use that I saw that was something I had never seen before. But I guess the question I have here is, of all of the different information being displayed to you, what is the most important? Like, I saw your cooldowns there, I saw your shot rotations, I saw your boss information, you know, aggro and stuff like that. What would you say in terms of UI, like, what should be displayed most prominently where the eyes naturally go?
Well, I'm not sure if it's what most people do, but I mostly stare at my character, at like my physical's character, like my character's animation in the game, so I could see if I'm, you know, on top of something I shouldn't be or in a place I shouldn't be. And I put whatever's more important in terms of survivability closer to it. So I have the cast bars and the auto shot bars, and I have the enemy cast bar as well, very close to my character. Those are very important things, because the biggest thing is maximizing your damage on the move and being notified when something's going to happen, which is usually correlated to something cast by the boss or your, whatever your target is. And very close to that, I have my, I guess my action bars. Because I use the cooldowns off the action bars. I use the swirlies. That's what I call them, I guess. I don't have like those bars that tell you what you're gonna do next. I tried using those, but I don't really like them because it's pretty static.
Yeah, the staticness I didn't like, and the other thing I didn't like was that just even if there's if you're going on a mob that doesn't have a hunter's mark up and it's not worth putting a hunter's mark, it won't do anything but tell you to use hunter's mark.
Yeah, I don't actually know about that. But all I know is I didn't like it the first couple times I was messing around with it.
Yeah, and it seems like these fights are so fluid and so dynamic that it would be really hard to have a mod tell you, oh, press this now, do this now. I mean, I do something similar where I keep my action bar basically right underneath my avatar, and I just have some timers that sit on the cast bars that show me the cooldowns for each of the shots, so I can see when they're going to be available. But I certainly don't have a mod that tells me, I recommend you hit this now, kind of thing.
It might be pretty good if someone like picks up a hunter and they have something like that to tell them, or maybe a new spec that they haven't played before. I think it has a good guideline, but in the end, you don't want to. I don't think you want to be using something like that.
Especially not once you're getting down to the point where you're trying to maximize your bleed damage and maximize your stings and try and roll Chimera shots across two mobs, anything like that. It would break. It wouldn't tell you the right information.
Yeah. Going back to the question, though, there's nothing like of pristine importance on my UI, I don't think. I don't even know if that's the right word to use. But the way I looked at my UI, I wanted to not have anything that I wouldn't really need to look at on there. So I don't have like recount. I don't have like, scrolling combat text. I don't even have my HP and numbers because like it doesn't matter. I'm not going to look at the numbers, right? So anything that shouldn't be there isn't there, and it makes what's left important. So that's kind of how I looked at that. And after a while, I pretty much got to end up using that UI.
That's a very very wise way of building a UI.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Well, speaking of your UI, then add-ons. Do you have any add-ons that you find particularly useful that other people might not be using?
I'm probably going to go back to the internal cooldown thing. I use an add-on called HeatSync. It's like really outdated, so if you wanted to go out there and download this add-on, it's pretty much going to be completely useless to you. But what you're going to want to do if you do end up trying out something like an internal cooldown mod, like HeatSync, which is what I use, you're probably gonna have to edit the library files because these are like old add-ons. I don't know why that I haven't seen any like newer add-ons for internal cooldowns. And HeatSync is like last updated in Naxx, so like unless you're using like a Grim Toll and Darkwing Card Greatness, it's not really gonna do anything for you. But
ironically, those are my options.
Yep, exactly. I think they are for a lot of people.
Head over to WoW Interface and pick that one up, I guess.
Yeah, until I get an upgrade, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So on to some questions. Before we go on to break, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about gear. And I know this is not what you focus on, but I just wanted to get them out there. Would you say that Armor Pen or Agility would be the choice, would be the gear of choice for a hunter in best-in-slot gear like yourself?
Well, I don't have best-in-slot gear, but I guess it's closer to it than most people.
Than most.
Yeah. I mostly judge gear decisions based on spreadsheets, and I'm using Shandara's spreadsheet, which probably everyone else is using who's going into this stuff. And I pretty much, when new gear comes out, I try to configure like one of those best-in-slot, best-possible DPS kind of setups. And I actually come up with different stuff than whatever's posted on Elitist Jerks on that topic, but it's pretty similar usually. And I make my decisions based on that most of the time. In TOC, in the current like eye level that we're in, you're going to have like a 100, 120 DPS increase from going full agility to full armor pen, and the loss that you get from doing that in terms of multi-target damage is is substantially greater. So I probably will not be making that change. I might in Ice Crown, because you know, you can have more armor pen, you can get even closer to the cap, I assume.
Okay. I'd actually scheduled Darkbrew to ask this question, but I'm just going to ask it now because I want to know. When you say you lose on multi-target for armor penetration, that's probably because there's no debuffs on that target?
Yeah. Usually when you have an add in the fight, it's not going to be sundered, right? So like the first attack that you use on an add that comes into a fight is Arcane Shot, because even if your armor pen spec, it's not going to have the sunder, so it's not actually going to do more damage than a... I mean, it's actually going to do more damage than a steady shot, is what I meant to say. And okay. After that, you're going to like Serpent Sting it, and then you're going to go back to your initial target. And when Serpent Sting is about to run out, you Chimera Shot it, and all this stuff's magic damage. So...
Okay.
Yeah, it's mostly agility that's going to increase your multi-target damage in terms of Serpent Stinging, and also in terms of volley, because if you stack armor pen, your volley damage is going to plummet. You're losing crit, which is probably the most important stat for volley, and as well as AP, which might be pretty good now that they changed the coefficient.
Okay. And so multi-target adds, and then I suppose any movement-based fight, but... I mean, which of the fights in TOC are the ones that really punish armor pen hunters?
Probably almost all of them.
I mean, okay.
I guess Valks would be really good if you had armor pen, but I don't actually do damage on twin Valks because I just run around and pick up orbs. We only use one tank, so I'm capped at like 90k threat, which is like three attacks. I use like I use Stam gear. I have like 36,000 life on that fight, so like it doesn't. I don't know. On everything else, though, agility is better, so there's no reason to do armor pen. My case, at least.
Okay. Dark, you can ask my question about the boot enchant.
Yeah, we were gonna just ask then for your boot enchants. What would you do? You recommend like a run speed boot enchant or agility? And I've heard good arguments for both. What would your thoughts on that?
I feel that I can keep DPS while I'm moving, so unless the movement will give me a substantial survivability increase, like let's say we are doing Fel Mist, I would absolutely need the run speed, you know. But we're not doing Sunwell anymore. I can't really think of any fights that we're doing nowadays, even in Ulduar, that would give me that kind of advantage. So it's mostly a DPS thing, and I feel that I can keep up with shots on the move. So the run speed wouldn't really give me a DPS increase, and there's no need for the survivability benefit right now.
Okay. That makes sense.
Now, you've written about this before. When the race changes came live, did you consider dropping the troll style that you value so much for the superior, if more boring, orc racials?
Yeah, it's been considered. I'm probably going to be one of the last ones that does it, but I'm only... Right now, I've planned that if BM is ever the top DPS spec, I have no choice but to go Orc because the racials are far superior for BM. But as long as Marks and Survival are number one and there's like a competitive bow, it's pretty much even. It's probably the only thing I'm not going to maximize or hesitate to. Yeah.
You do enough other things to that clearly this is not an issue for you, but if I suppose if some young upstart in the guild on Drendon who has a podcast decides to start pulling the same numbers as you, I'm kidding, I won't be pulling the same numbers as you, but in that situation, would you consider it if somebody was, you know, routinely breaking your records with an orc?
I mean, I don't feel bad when a guy does like 2 DPS higher than me, and that's pretty much what you're going to do as Orc in this current situation.
Okay, like, so you think it's so small then? It's only 2 DPS?
Well, it's a little bit more than that. On the spreadsheet, it's probably like, I don't know, 15, maybe 20, but that's pretty minor. The thing is, people don't really realize the Orc racial, in terms of cooldown, it's better, but it's not better because it gives you more damage. It's better because you can use it more often. And
you can control it.
Yeah, but the thing with the troll is if you stack all your cooldowns, it gives you more than the spreadsheet estimates because of exponential gain on your cooldowns, because the troll cooldown is a higher DPS increase. It's just for a shorter time, and it's not as often.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So if you manage your cooldowns really well, the difference is even smaller than you think it is.
Okay. I think it's a good time for us to go and take a break, so we will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
This is Scott Johnson from The Instance at theinstance.net.
This is Tristan Johnson from the Elitist Podcast.
This is Stompalina from RarCast.com.
This is Mairdrit from Treebound.net.
And I'm giving my voice
to Azeroth United's first annual
Hearts, Hands, and Voices for Child's Play.
For Child's Play charity.
You can give your heart, hand, and voice to support Child's Play by visiting
AzerothUnited.com.
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 All right, welcome back, everybody, and we are continuing with our interview with Kriparian, and this time joining us now, we have Frostheim here, who's going to has a very simple test he'd like to administer here. So, Frost, welcome to the show.
Hey, yeah, I apologize for being late, but as you guys know, I was doing a little bit of theory crafting, specifically on Kriparian, and, you know, his many PvP achievements, PvE achievements, damage achievements, achievements. And I was doing some theory craft on how that's possible, came up with some potentially disturbing results. So I have a really quick test I would like to run. Whenever, you know, theory crafting alone's not enough, we have to do some testing. I'd like to run a really quick test in which I'm going to ask a series of questions to Kriparian. It'll only be about 5 questions. And Kriparian, you need to answer as if you play a holy priest.
Yeah, I got it. All right.
And then I will ask a series of questions of Euripides, and you answer as if you play a hunter.
Okay.
Alrighty, and then Dark Brew will be our final judge at the end of this test. So, Kriparian, what class do you play?
A holy priest is what I play.
And how does it make you feel when you heal someone?
It makes me feel good. It feels like I'm helping them. It's like I've achieved something without actually doing very much.
Okay, I see. So you find healing to be easy. You like the fact that it's easier than other classes.
Yes.
What is your favorite class to heal?
I like to heal myself the most to ensure that I don't die, and it allows me to stand in stuff that I shouldn't be standing in.
All right. A warlock, a rogue, and a hunter pet all take spike damage at the same time. Which one do you heal first?
It's a really close call between the rogue and the hunter pet. Probably gonna go with the hunter pet, because he's gonna complain if it dies.
Okay.
All right, so now Euripides, I have a series of questions for you.
All right, shoot.
What class do you play?
Hunter.
How does it make you feel when you damage someone?
Someone or a boss?
A boss.
Well, pretty good, yeah. And I enjoy hitting, shooting things. Melting face is what I do.
I see. And so, now let's say you're fighting the faction champions. What's your favorite class to damage in the faction champions?
I would have to go with Resto Druid, just because. I just absolutely love purging hots, and beating up a Resto Druid just makes me feel good.
And what DPS class do you think is the most broken?
Hunters.
Okay. So for the benefit of our audience, if you guys are unaware, I just administered the Turing test, which you can look up on Wikipedia, but it is the test to determine whether or not someone is an artificial intelligence. The theorycrafting I did suggested that it was very probable that Kriparian is actually a robot sent from the future to conquer WoW. So...
I'm glad I know this now.
Yeah.
His mother
we don't
or
know
wife
for certain
or,
yet.
Or friends would like a word with you.
It puts all things into perspective now. I mean, I kind of know what I need to do.
Uh-oh.
Well, this was what this test was meant to determine. So, Dark Brew, what do you feel based on the responses? Did it seem like one of the two interviewees was a robot?
Well, it's one of the two, you know.
Doesn't have to be one of the two.
Well, I based on the responses, I was going to say yes.
Oh, which one?
And I was going to go with Kriparian, but I snuck a peek at his achievements, and he has not yet gotten the Earth, Wind, and Fire 25-player achievement, so therefore he is human after all.
Oh, Now, is he human, or perhaps he's just a robot in a raid with humans?
That's a good question. Nah, I think he's just human. Probably one of okay. the best darn hunters I've had the opportunity to speak to.
All right, well, now that we've got that out of the way, we can continue with the interview, but I thought for the benefit of our audience, it was only fair to make sure we weren't interviewing a robot.
Sure, or if we were, just, you know, how awesome is that, right? Anyways.
That's a good point.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. Before we go off the air, are there any shout-outs that you'd like to give?
Shout-outs? I don't know. Yeah. Go Exodus. Visit my YouTube channel.
Yep. Right. YouTube channel will be posted. And once again, if you just want to look it up now and you don't have access to the show notes or whatever, just go ahead and take a look at Google and search for Kripparian, K-R-I-P-P-A-R-R-I-A-N, and it will be the first result, one of the first results that comes up. So thank you very much. Thanks again. And it was nice having you on the show.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it was a real pleasure talking to you.
Hey, this is Evan from RaidWarning.net.
This is Emily from the Combobulator Podcast.
This is Dan Wood from DiscraftyDwarf.com.
This is Veliaf from Der Hexenmeister, located at veliaf.wordpress.com.
And I'm giving my voice to Azeroth United's
first annual Hearts,
Hands, and
Voices for Child's Play charity.
You too can give your heart, hand, and voice
and support Child's Play by visiting
AzerothUnited.com.
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 That's www.azerothunited.com.
Well, that was a really awesome interview. I learned a lot. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this again, take notes this time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, and that was obviously someone who's taken playing a hunter to a whole new level, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, one of the things I was really excited about, well, interested in at least, I'm not sure I'm even going to be able to do it, but what he was talking about, cooldown timing with the internal cooldowns on your trinkets. That is something that I can't even begin to do with my current UI, so I'm going to have to go and take a look at how I do things right now. I might try the one that he uses. What did he call it again?
Heatsink was the one he said, and he said it was a much older add-on. Sounds like maybe it's been discontinued and no longer updated, but that was the one he said.
And unfortunately, that's not going to help me at all, because I have Death's Verdict, which came out since last time Heatsink's been updated. Yeah, so I got to find something else, because I'm really interested in getting something that shows me the procs. I wonder how important it is to see how much time is left versus maybe just having your power aura set up to show you when it does proc.
I think the how much time is left is the only important part, though, because I can always see them when they proc. My greatness card has a picture of a friggin' golden, fiery something, a bird or something coming over my head. I can definitely see that. That's not the issue.
It has a sound effect to go with it, too.
I play with the sound off. I'm a bit of a douche.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned
the you're a disabled gamer.
No, I'm not.
You're
a disabled gamer.
You play without
your vent.
Sound?
I can hear vent. You don't even use vent. Don't you use the in-game voice solution?
We now use vent, and I kind of miss the in-game.
Really?
Yeah. We have
tried it once and I missed vent. I guess it's just a matter of what you started with.
It's a combination of We have more people with problems with vent, and the in-game suppresses the games, which you play with the sound off, so it doesn't matter to you. But with vent, sometimes...
That's why I play with the sound off.
Yeah, see? There's a solution to that. But,
Yeah. Well, unless they make it interoperate with vent, and I don't imagine that would be too complex, but I'm not sure we'll ever see that. Unless they make it interoperate with vent, I'm not gonna go back.
getting back to the cooldowns, I mean, is there any reason...
I think Dark Brew had something to say, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, didn't he, Kripparian mention, though, that by the time you see the proc go off, I mean, you're almost delayed too much to take full advantage of it, unless I misunderstood.
Well, that and chances are, by the time you see the proc go off, if you didn't know it was coming, you've already blown your cooldown on something else. You're just like, you know, oh, here's a, I don't know, some sort of minor stacking stat-based, or stacking... spec-based buff that I have, so I'm just going to go ahead and, you know, blow it now while I can, and then boom, here's, you know, greatness card, and you've already used it, so to speak. I mean, I think the most important part is the timer, because they all seem to have 45-second internal cooldowns, mm-hmm. and it all seems, because they're all activated on crits or whatever, it seems to happen virtually instantaneously after that, so.
But, and he wasn't just tracking trinket cooldowns, he was also looking at his auto shot cooldown and timing any necessary movements to that as well.
That I do already, actually. Yeah, yeah. I don't do it very well, but I do it.
I do that as well. I don't have an add-on to show me. I just kind of have a feel for when the auto shot's ready. And I just do that, like, stop for a second until it goes off, and then you'll have to shoot and scoot.
Yeah. Well, I always used to... I actually did used to play with sound a lot more than I do now. And when I had a gun, at least, it was nice because I would hear the bang, and I'm like, okay, I know I can take a couple of steps. But I have quartz set up for a variety of other reasons, and I use quartz to also time my auto shots. So every time I see the bar has finished filling up and it's not there anymore, I just basically stop doing my attack for a couple of, or I stop doing my walk for just long enough for the thing to bang off again, and then I just keep going. And it takes a little bit with my latency. I have pretty bad latency. So I believe this is now where we are going to talk about an email that we received. Unless, Frost, did you have something else you wanted to mention? You had started off before.
I love my new trinket. That's all I got.
Okay. That's all you got. Okay, good enough. If I ever get one, we'll email each other about it all the time.
We'll be BFF.
Okay, here's an email that I got, and I'm going to boil this down a bit, but basically the gist of it is that the guy wrote in to say that he has an alt hunter, a level 80 alt, that he leveled his BM, and he doesn't want to change from BM because he likes the playstyle, and he's got his professions maxed out at 450, he doesn't want to raid, but he also wants to be fairly good in DPS, but only in five mans. Now, he was wondering if we had any suggestions to help him if he wanted to stay BM. And when we were talking about this offline, I believe, what was it you said, Frost? Best advice to stay BM?
Yeah, the best advice, if you're interested in doing five-man heroics and you want to do good damage as BM, the best thing you can do is respec to marksman.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm going to dispute that a little bit here, just because in my experience, I've met some people who really like BM, and they've gotten so good at it that they actually do more as BM than they do as other ones. And to be honest, I think our interview today really underscored this. The individual skill of the player can be one of the biggest determining factors of your overall performance.
Absolutely. So can you tell me why BM is good? Let's talk about why BM is good in five mans.
Well, I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay. Let's talk about something different then.
Okay, yeah. So in terms of individual skill, I can kind of see that. But in terms of five man DPS, you're right. Another thing I had said offline was that I believe that BM might not have as much of a gap between the theoretical maximum of survival and marksman in five mans, because survival and marks in five mans have more of a tendency to scale with raid buffs, at least in my opinion, whereas BM kind of, they have a bit of a, they're a curve, they gain more DPS on the lower end of the raid buffs than they do on the higher end, I believe, and that's possibly why they don't do as well in 25-man and 10-man content. But I think that in a completely unbuffed environment, BM will not necessarily lose as much as people think they will. It's not like, I think if you were to test this out, you might find that against an unbuffed BM hunter against an undebuffed dummy, would be less far behind marks in survival than it would in a similar raid situation.
Well, I think another important thing in BM's favor in five mans is both marksmen and SV rely on a certain amount of getting up to speed. You know, marksman really wants to have their serpent sting and their hunter's mark on a target. And, you know, in five mans, by the time you get those two up, Mott might be dead.
Right, and same with SV. Survival. Really,
yeah, survival wants to be standing still. Right. As survival wants to get the black arrow up, to get the proxy, you know, even lock and load, you know, three lock
Correct.
And loads. That's something's going to be dead before you get all of your lock and loads off. So Beastmastery has an advantage there. They're getting more of, they're getting closer to their maximum DPS actually happening.
On-demand DPS.
On the five-man.
No, on demand, yes. Meaning when they need it.
Yes. However, I think...
There's always a however.
Semicolon, however, comma. I do think that for five-mans, marksman has a huge advantage, and here's why. Five-mans, more than any place else you're going, the vast majority of your damage is happening in AoE. You're just, you know, your tank pulls a pack, or in my case, two or three packs of mobs, and then you're volleying stuff down. Marksman, I mean, particularly Beast Mastery, has such lower hunter DPS, so much is from the pet, that their AoE is really weak. Marksman, super strong volleys. And so that's where, you know, when you're... And it's possible that, and don't get me wrong, if we were just pulling one pack of mobs at a time, I'd still be volleying. But, you know, when I'm used to, you know, a hallway or, you know, a third of the instance getting pulled at once with a boss, it's all about the volley. However, I guess it's a little beside the point. The point is, he wants to play Beast Mastery. What can he do?
Well, I haven't played Beast Mastery since it was nerfed, actually. I think you have an off-spec, right, Dark?
I do. I have a Beastmaster off-spec, and I've started to run it. In fact, just the other day, I started running it in five-mans, and mainly because I got not one, but two of the three Spirit Beasts over the weekend, Friday and Saturday.
I read that.
Oh, I'm wow.
Like, who are you bribing at Blizzard? I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, and it's not like, and just to make matters worse, just to let the hating get even really, I mean, I'm talking about 45 minutes probably of total patrolling and searching in order to find these. I mean, you talk about being right place, right time, lightning striking twice. It happened. I got the one in Zul'Drak and then the Lokwanahawk down in Sholazar Basin and just decided I would go see what would happen, and there they both were, so...
So you took a celebratory five-man BM trip?
I am, because I got to get these guys leveled up. But, you know, I think we're at the point now where what I would recommend to this guy is if he really wants to play BM is just keep running heroics. I don't know what his gear is like now, but just farm badges and just keep running him and get all the best badge gear you could possibly get. Do the heroic daily every day and start collecting as many triumph badges as you can and just start getting all of that gear and, you know, pretty soon, most of the people, we already outgear this content by, I'd say, a huge margin, at least with the heroic dungeons, that really hard to screw it up and not do good DPS no matter what hunter spec you are. Even me going in there with, you know, level 77 and level 76 pets, I'm doing quite well on the meters as a Beastmaster in these instances.
That's an exceptionally good point, to be completely honest, because... The lowest hanging fruit right now is about three times stronger than it needs to be in order to get any of the heroics out of the way. We totally outgear this stuff. And
yeah, I mean,
I don't think, no matter how bad, even if you were to take a really disgusting spec where you didn't have the 51 pointer anywhere, like you split your points evenly among all three, you'd still do good enough that, you know, with the ambient gear just floating around out there right now, and assuming you didn't know what you're doing and you were just auto-shouting the whole time, you'd probably still do well enough that you hold up your spot in a heroic.
Yeah, I mean, we did a Halls of Lightning other day, four-manned it. Now, we didn't four-man it in the way Frost does. We actually had a healer and a tank, and you know, the missing component was a DPS, but still, we four-manned it and didn't have too much trouble getting through it. And you know, in the DPS that we were doing... was still higher than when it first came out, and when we just were freshly leveled 80s and had a full five-man group, we were doing more DPS with this four-man group than we were with our normal five-man group. So
yeah, I think gear is so high. You know, as Dark said, we four-manned Violet Hold without a healer, and just our gear is so high, we do that much damage. And we quite a while ago we quit using the LFG option because we're like, yeah, well, there's only four of us, that's not a problem. If there's only three of us, that's not a problem. One healer, one tank, and one DPS, we'll win. It's still more DPS than we were doing when we first started Heroics.
pretty funny that way.
My advice for playing Beastmaster in Heroics is, you know, number one, you want to multi-shot whenever you can. I would put your pet on defensive. You do not want to be losing pet DPS as your pet runs back to you and you tell it to go to another target. In general, unless you know something's going to be up a long time, when I'm doing heroics, I don't bother with Hunter's Mark. I don't bother with Serpent Sting. I'm not going to get my money's worth out of either of those. Now,
Serpent Sting has to be up about 70% of its duration in order to do the damage that justifies the mana it costs.
Yeah, a little bit less for Marksman, because if we get a Chimera shot in there.
Oh, yeah, no, Marksman absolutely needs marksman should always open and then do the chimera shot. I count it as the part of the cost of chimera shot.
Yeah, I mean, generally, except when I'm doing heroics, I usually don't bother with Serpentine because nothing's going to live that long. Even usually the first thing I attack, I'll make sure, and my tank hates this, but I'll make sure I'm attacking something that nobody else is attacking, and I'll Serpentine Chimera to make sure it doesn't die before I get my second shot off. But but then after that, I don't bother with Serpent Sting. I don't bother with Hunter's Mark. Obviously, on bosses, you want to. But on the trash, multi-shot, keep your pet on defensive so that it's always attacking something. If you've got four or more targets, volley. If you've got three targets or fewer, don't volley. Particularly as BM, you're going to be better off single targeting.
Just a point here, an alternative to putting your pet on defensive is getting good enough at controlling your pet that he never backs up for more than a quarter of a second and always has a target set up for him next. Personally, I use mouse over macros. I have a mouse over pet attack that I've got set up so that the second the first one dies, actually even before the first one dies, my pet's already on to the second one and I don't lose any DPS time. The only thing I worry about with defensive is when my pet's on defensive, with one exception, every time that's ever happened, he has pulled way more than I intended to have pulled. Just bad luck, I suppose.
All right, well, I'm going to say something potentially mean here. But given the nature of this guy's question, I don't think he wants to work to become exceedingly skilled at mouse over macros and target switching. I think just pet on defensive is going to work out really well for him.
Yeah, you're probably right. But either way, so you have been listening to episode 14 of the Hunting Party Podcast. This is Euripides from OutDPS.com.
And this is Frosttime from WarcraftHuntersUnion.com.
This is Darkmoof from TheBrewHall.com.
And you can send us an email, and we'll read it on the show and give you some sort of answer. The new email address for the Hunting Party is huntingpartypodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, and you can check us out on iTunes. We have an RSS feed, and links are available in the show notes as well as outdps.com. And, of course, thebrewhall.com and warcrafthuntersunion.com both have links to the files as well there. So pretty much anywhere you go, you'll be able to follow us.
Yeah, also, if you like us, please don't be shy about leaving us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, we love those. Every time you leave us a review on iTunes, we give each other virtual high fives. So, as always, have a good week.
And happy hunting.
Shai halud. Sorry, I panicked. I realized I was going to think about that, and I didn't. I was going to have a tagline, and I forgot. Oh, I just said Shai halud because I hadn't actually thought of what mine should be. Until just now, I'm like, oh shit, I was supposed to think of something. I was going to do that, and I didn't.